In our lives, we all follow certain norms. Some of them are outdated. Still, it is not easy to question them and initiate change. This is the exact topic that I would like to discuss today with my guest. She grew up in Canada and has lived in Switzerland for the last 26 years. During her career, she managed to reinvent herself several times. Now, she is the Chief Sustainability Officer and Partner at Deloitte. Delighted to welcome Liza Engel to our podcast today.
Durch die Decke, der Advanced Podcast mit Alkistis Petropaki. Ein Podcast für Businessfrauen in der Schweiz mit Zahlen, Fakten, Inspiration und mutigen Geschichten.
Hello, Liza.
Hi, Alkist. It's so nice to be here. Thank you for having me.
Great to have you here today. You have brought an object.
I did.
With you. So can you tell us a little bit more? What is it and what's the story behind?
I sure can. So what I brought is a classic compact mirror that women often have as they travel or in their purses. And in the first instance, you might think I have this to make sure I look good. I do like fashion and I love a fabulous lipstick, but it's not the reason why I brought this. Mm-hmm. So I firmly believe that change starts with yourself. And, you know, when we look in the mirror and look at the superficial things, I think it's important that we also use it to reflect on our own behaviors and question our own biases. All of them have them. And how can I make my change in the world in that regard? Second reason can also be a lot of my work is around change management, transformation. And in that context, there's always resistance. And I think you actually do need to put a mirror on that resistance, because that's exactly where you need to focus your energies. And if I had a third reason, I would say, coming here, I was thinking of the song Man in the Mirror by Michael Jackson. I think mm-hmm. we need a song Woman in the Mirror.
How nice. And I like your point about resistance, right? Of course, we all like to get yeses. Mm-hmm. Right? No's are always harder. How do you handle no's?
Oh, so I'm like everybody else. A no can trigger me as well. And I have spent a lot of time working on myself and trying to get better and to be able to handle things better. And one of the best keys that I learned in my career was not to react, but to respond. And mm-hmm. the difference is a moment of reflection. So if I feel triggered, I try to really just take a deep breath, plant my feet firmly on the ground, and let that be for a moment. And that gives me what I would say the added advantage compared to the previous Liza, the earlier version of myself, where I can then handle things in a better way.
Mm-hmm. That sounds amazing. And as you said before, resistance is a kind of energy, right? Let's look at it positively. I think we're going to talk more about resistance in a moment because it is so important in connection with change. I would like to go a little bit in your current role, a cool title, Chief Sustainability Officer. What is it exactly?
What does it mean exactly? It's a very, very broad role. Actually, if you compare one sustainability officer to another, how they practice that role can vary. Their backgrounds also often vary. It is a huge responsibility because it is requiring a tremendous amount of change. If we think about it, on the one hand, it's the DNA of the organization to completely rethink how we operate and how we do business. They're often rather small teams. My team is rather small, as are others of my peers. And we have to engage with the entire business on how they go about implementing the strategy. Then there's a third aspect, and that is the whole ecosystem. In the past, when I studied business, we talked about our competitors and how we're going to do better than them. And whilst we still have a healthy, you know, debate or competition, now we have to think about our suppliers as really partners. So the value chain up and downstream, we have to calculate the emissions and share them and compare them. So it's a completely different way of how we operate. So that's the ecosystem. It's huge. And the layer, the third point, and that's the layer that is goes into everything, is changing people's behavior is hard. It's one of the hardest things to do, and it's the most important thing to do. I love the aspect of the job because legacy is important to me, and leaving the world hopefully in a better place than I started it would be a great legacy, I think.
Mm-hmm. And changing people's behavior is integral part of your role. And change in general seems to be the red thread, right, in your career, because in you didn't have a linear career path. You changed many, many times. Can you tell us what triggered each new beginning?
Each new change. So indeed, I have a squiggly career, one of the squiggliest careers of a lot of people I know. It actually already started in university. Believe it or not, my first year of university, I studied genetics. And then I did a year of...
genetics.
Yes, genetics. I'm actually a science nerd. My second year, I did computer programming. I was one of two girls out of 400. And then I studied business. So already there, the squiggles became. The common denominator to your question is definitely a combination of a learning and an opportunity. So each time I do something, we're getting information about what do we like about that role, about that vocation, about that job. And so when I came to Switzerland after my studies, as you mentioned before, 26 years ago, I have done everything from my first role was working in auditing, moving on to marketing, brand strategy, communications, digital transformation, agile transformation, and now transformation in the context of sustainability. So there is a common thread. It is the change, the transformation, and the people aspect.
Mm-hmm. And what you forgot is that you are a communication specialist as well. You give workshops on presentation and communication skills. So I'm curious to hear from you. Do you see any differences in communication between genders?
Yes and no. So the associations that we apply to the female gender and the associations we apply to the male gender, all of us, each gender has the capacity for both. So I observe also men who have traits that we often associate to women will also be discriminated against in certain contexts. So just to put that into perspective. And where I think the huge difference is I often speak about, I think our path, our journey is like a 2 or 3 lane highway. Forgive me for using the highway as a metaphor. And the men, they just have more lanes because they are allowed more variation in their behavior than we are. And, you know, circling back to my example about challenging our own biases and norms, looking in the mirror ourselves. You know, if I have a situation where I feel a woman is being particularly short and staccato in her behavior to me and almost maybe to the point of rude, the first thing I need to do is ask myself, would I apply that same judgment on a man? And how can I widen my perspective and rewrite that narrative in my head?
Mm-hmm. But do you see specific differences in the way women present, for instance?
Yeah, it's actually, I just have some very recent examples. And I think as women, we articulate the risks quite openly, which is not a bad thing when you think about it. So, you know, if we're talking about in an interview context or about whether or not we should, you know, go live with a project, women will more often articulate, you know, I would be concerned about this. These are things we have to think about. Whereas I know quite a few men who have told me to my face, if they have 30% certainty, they will go into the boardroom and say, this is going to happen. That's something that I would never say. So if we were to look at the stereotypical aspects, I think the risk aspect and how we apply that to ourselves, maybe the last example is also how women apply for jobs. We know for a fact that we have to be very careful how we describe the requirements, using the words like required or nice to have, because if a woman doesn't fulfill all of them, research shows that she's less likely to apply for the job, whereas a man is okay with having less than 50.
There are certain differences and communication styles. And of course, they have to do, as you said before, with the different roles, right? Gender roles and stereotypes that we all have in our heads. And before we dive into this discussion, our advanced colleague, Lena Schwertzmann, has collected some of those gender norms and some opinions that are still very present in our society. Lena, what have you found?
So we all have gender stereotypes in mind. I can give you some examples. So one, for example, is women take care of the kids. So women still today in job interviews are asked how they manage their job while having kids, and men are never getting these kind of questions. But stereotypes kick in already much earlier. For example, when we make the decision of what to study. So women choose to study social professions and men technical ones. Another typical gender norm is that women take care of the household. So many couples have the best intention to equally share their household duties, but then the children arrive and women spend so much more time in household and care work than men do. So the tricky part about gender norms is that they are mainly unconscious. This is also the reason why they are so difficult to change. So to give you a private example, is that it doesn't matter how much my husband and I talk about it, my husband keeps on asking, please let me know what I can do in the household to help you. And this already unfolds the reality who is responsible for it. And to put this into a more global context, changing stereotypes and norms seem to become even more challenging in today's world. Just reading the news about people who openly call for a return to the old gender order.
Ooh, this last point, this is a big one, right? And this is not happening only in the US, Liza. We see it everywhere in the world, right?
Mm-hmm. That's correct. I mean, the news right now, the headlines are very much to the south. That's still the Canadian in me across the ocean. And but it's not just there. It's everywhere. And, you know, in the last year, the economic situation has been such that many organizations are looking at where they can save costs and how they can do things differently. And very often the DEI investments are being reconsidered. And how can that be done? And we know that we have not yet reached the targets that we have set out. Collectively, all of the organizations. It's definitely this situation is bringing a lot of polarization into the world. I think that's not what we need to be focusing on, but rather what is the common denominator that we're all striving for. There is always a common denominator, even when there's two polar sides.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I think this is extremely important, what you're saying, polarization, right? All these news and things that are happening are bringing us further away, basically. What is your opinion on this one?
So there's, that's often when I mentioned before, respond and react. My first physical reaction, I feel my body is to get upset, right? But I think about conversations I've had with my own children about careers, what they would like to do and what's important to them. And we know that there's also statistics showing that there's this new trend where, you know, women, I think there was just an article recently in the newspaper about that, where women are choosing to stay at home and they're actually getting then a salary for that. And, you know, so many questions come into my mind when I hear that. You know, one is the whole pension fund situation. I mean, we know for a fact that when it gets towards, you know, later on in life, be it through divorce situations where then at that point, you know, the pension funds get divided up and spread out. Meanwhile, you know, the person who worked predominantly earlier has a very nice salary and will continue to be able to build up their pension. Whereas with that split moment, the woman is then not having the potential because she spent so much time at home, her earning potential is quite a bit reduced. And then in the end, she's ending up just about on social support, whereas, and those are things you don't think about when you're 25, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. Lena has spoken before about other things that are typically happening, those unwritten rules that are in our heads. In your personal life, is there one, or career, right? Is there one that particularly bothered you?
An unwritten rule. I would actually like to go back to the statement about how the division of work at home. If you go back to before we have families, we're often in some sort of an education, and there's almost always group work at some point. Nobody gets around at group work. I don't know about you, but I was often the one doing I felt like about 80%. I was very much an overachiever. So it was really important for me to get, you know, the highest possible mark that I could. And so that meant that I ended up doing about 80% sometimes, more often than not. And that wasn't fair. And, you know, why is it that we allow ourselves to go into these situations where it is assumed that we do this? It begins with little things like, you know, a teacher who calls the mom as the number one when a child is sick, right? And my challenge to how to address that is to think about home like a project. You set it up like a team. You look at what are the preferences of each individual? What do you really like to do? Because maybe there's some easy low-hanging fruits there. I'll do this, you do that. What are the things actually you really don't like to do? I'll do it from the opposite perspective. And then, you know, you divide and conquer. Then that's not done there. You have to do like weekly or monthly, depends on how detail orientated you are as a person, but you need to do review situations and ask each other, does this work for you? Does this work for me? And, you know, life happens. Sometimes there's a change. Somebody might have a really intense project and they need to, you know, ask for help a little bit. I think Brené Brown also talks about this, where they speak openly, her and her husband, about this, the percentage. And, I think that's been so far my recipe for success. It's always dynamic and it always needs to be relooked at. But I wouldn't be married to the wonderful man that I have if we didn't have a good project management system at home.
Exactly. So again, cooperation, right?
Yeah. Yes.
Is the power Absolutely. That brings everybody further and not polarization and division of things. So we've heard a lot of things. I think we recognized a lot of points in our own lives as well. But does all this actually have a scientific basis as well? Alexandra Rina from our team has selected some interesting facts and figures for us.
The gender gap in the business world widens around age 30, when most people have their first child. Data of the Gender Intelligence Report show that hiring women in their early 30s is considered riskier, as women may take leave or reduce their employment percentage after childbirth. This is the so-called maybe baby bias. Interesting is, this bias affects women without children too. Women and men work an equal amount of hours. The gender gap exists between paid and unpaid work. Women perform over 11 hours more per week than men. Stereotypical gender roles also affect career choices, especially in tech fields. Entities' tech careers that offer particularly high salaries and play a key role in our modern economy. With only 31% of the STEM degrees held by women, they are massively underrepresented in this area. In a Europe-wide comparison, Switzerland ranks at the bottom.
Interesting facts. Eliza, have you personally ever been in a situation where you questioned one of those social or professional rules?
Question them in the sense of they need to change, or question them in the sense of I don't think that fact is true? What do you mean by the question?
Both.
I mean, I like data, so I do, you know, look a lot of the research pieces and why is that? And, you know, I had my own example. So I have three children. I mentioned I have two sons and my youngest is a daughter. She is now 10. And she is, of course, highly intelligent. You know, she's previously, we were skipped a grade, not that that's relevant, but she, you know, she's excellent at school. And she came home from school last winter saying that I can't do math. And I was completely flabbergasted. How can this be that my child is suddenly believing mm-hmm. that she can't do that? And we really had to spend considerable time with her, not on the ability, it was in her head. Because if you tell yourself I can't do something, you're not even going to try. Like you've given up before you've even tried. And now I'm very happy to report, you know, almost a year later, it was worth the investment. But, you know, not everybody has the time and ability to sit down with a child and coach them through this process. And, you know, those are moments when I think about, you know, there's a lot of families where people are working so much because they have to. And those are the people that I'm concerned about, and not getting the opportunities that the privilege that my daughter has, I would dare to say, is a privilege to have. Yes, quite arrogant, isn't it? But I hope you don't understand what I mean.
Yes, absolutely. Exactly. And since we were talking about your daughter, I remember you said something in an interview that I found it was so inspiring. So you said, "I was raised to be a good girl. I raised my daughter to be a bold girl." Mm-hmm. I like this so much. And tell us, have you been successful with this?
Well, first of all, maybe to give context, that the good girl, and it's, you know, not judging on our parents' generation. They did the best they could at that time, they, with the information that they had. But I have so many memories of my dad, you know, saying goodbye to me and saying, "Be a good girl, Liza." My grandmother, I mean, my mom was was raised by a single parent, and it was surely not easy. And so all these other adults were constantly telling me to be a good girl. I was a good girl, was what I thought in my head. And I just realized how later on, when I went, you know, in the workforce, how much this actually hindered me, because I was constantly trying to adapt to the system and not rock the boat. And I remember having sometimes very provocative ideas, but I would always hold myself back because, you know, I've been raised to be a good girl. And that's why I made this statement. And to your question, be a bold girl. What does that mean concretely? It comes with all its pros and cons. So part of being bold for me is challenging the status quo, speaking up when you have a different opinion, not being worried about not everybody liking you, right? I was very concerned about being liked. That's the one good thing about getting a little bit older. You don't worry about that as much anymore. And so a concrete example to your question, if I've been successful or not, I recently had a situation where I noticed when I was speaking about something in that she did not like, she would sit there and pout. Mm-hmm. And that, sensing what that happens to my body, that triggered me. I was just getting furious. Why? Because I don't want to raise a princess. I don't want to raise a girl who tries to do emotional blackmail by not speaking. I want you to articulate what's going on in your head. I want you to give me arguments. It's okay to have a different opinion than me. I know that I'm, you know, strong, and so is your dad in the debate, in discussing, but I want you to learn these skills because they're crucial to life. So I expressed this to her and I said, you know, I sense that I'm triggered by your behavior. And then she said to me, "Well, if you know that you're triggered, why do you let yourself be triggered?"
So success.
I think we're on a good path.
Yes, absolutely. And it's good news that the young generation is changing, because when women are raised to be good girls, right, it is in a sense more difficult for women than to speak up, right, and to question norms, etc.
If I could add one thing, it's not just raising her simply to challenge. That comes in conjunction with taking on bold, difficult things, right? So often we talk about the next generation as, you know, they're not tough, or they just want to question, but they don't actually want to put in the work. I do think they're willing to do both, absolutely. And those are the two aspects that I'm trying to support in all three of my children.
Yes, sounds amazing to me. But what when you're bold, as you put it, your environment often reacts. Yes. Right. If you as woman are doing something different to what people are expecting from you, then the environment reacts. How do you deal with this?
Obviously, it depends on the situation. Those who know me, I like to have a good laugh. I like to have fun. A lot of, I think, when we think about what are the skills that help us, one of them, and it's maybe my personality, my background, I will use humor to try and highlight something. So, for instance, I don't know if this counts as a bold example, but sort of that classic moment when you realize you're at this weekly management meeting and you just realize that you were not aware until now that the men were meeting to have cigars once a month. It's a true story. Yeah? Mm-hmm. And I remember being, again, flabbergasted. I had no idea you were doing this. So I'm questioning, you know, the narrative in my head is like, were you hiding this? Why didn't you ever invite me that I could at least have the choice to go or not? I would not. That's one thing I don't do. I know some people swear you have to do it. I don't do it. It makes your hair stink. It's just so much work to wash out. But that was a moment where then I first used humor and says, well, actually, then great, us ladies are going to go to do a spa day. Is that okay if we do this on work time? there's not too many spas open late at night. So yeah, anyway, I think there's a lot of examples where how we deal with being boldness, I combine it sometimes with humor. And sometimes you do have to put the mirror on top of these situations and open up Pandora's box to have a conversation.
Of course. We know change is difficult, right? You've reinvented yourself in your career several times. How did you do it? How did you go about it?
Probably there is a big belief in general, not just for myself, in transferable skills. I recently saw a CV of somebody who had described her time off as a career break, her role. So she put it in under experience, and then she described all of her capabilities that she learned while being at home with tiny children, like 24/7 was in there. It was absolutely brilliant. And I love to see that. So, you know, transferable skills, how we apply them to the workplace. I also do once a year, usually coaching for people who are young people who are going to for their first job applications for an apprenticeship role. And I'm always exploring, what are your transferable skills? So last year I was in Meiringen, a school that had one third of farm kids, basically. And so I'm hearing, okay, transferable skills. You drive farm equipment that costs $300,000. That's a huge responsibility. Or you take care of four other children or animals, or you do the whole marketing of the products that you produce on the farm and then sell. You know how to do, you know, all the P's of marketing. So, you know, these are things, I think transferable skills are a big thing. And I also don't believe you have to know everything to be a leader. I've always never appreciated micromanagers as a boss. And so I think I remember when I first led a team that had social media experts, I didn't know that yet. Mm-hmm. But when you respect them for what they bring to the table and honor what you bring to the table, some amazing things can happen.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I like very much this this concept of transferable skills. So in your previous role, you were in HR.
Yes.
Now you're doing something completely different.
Yes.
How did you feel the moment you had to make this decision?
That's interesting. So I have thought about that a lot. And part of it is I remind myself when it gets really hard, I like big, hairy problems. I like challenges. I personally am not the right person to have in like status quo or just, you know, keep things running. I like to work on transformation. So I know that about myself through all of my previous experiences. And in making that decision, it was about building up something that was, you know, previously run as a project management office. And I knew that, you know, we knew what regulation was going to come. We knew what the demands of our clients were that were increasing exponentially. So I knew that this was really important from a risk perspective, but also from an opportunity. So, you know, I pitched the case and I have luckily a really good CEO who supports me and knows my track record. And so, you know, that gave me the opportunity to give this a chance. Did I ever doubt myself? Absolutely. I'm human. You know, just because, you know, when I sit here across from you and I sound like I've had some good reflections on things, that does not mean that I have not had moments where I've questioned if I could do this. I put a lot of pressure on myself the first few months, but I educated myself. I did put skin in the game. I did work on that. And then I realized what I bring to the table is I'm also good enough.
Absolutely. So here you're saying change needs courage, right? At some point of time, you need to jump. Mm-hmm. And you need to have confidence in yourself that you have the basics, at least. You don't need to know everything, but confidence in yourself that you can do it.
And at the opposite spectrum of courage is fear, right? And so what are we afraid of? We're afraid of being judged. We're afraid of not being good enough. And that's where a lot of my work or training also on neuroscience that tells us actually a lot of those fears are no longer helping. They're not serving me. Mm-hmm. It's okay to have a quick reality check, but if it's not serving me, taking no action is even worse than taking action. And so with that comes the healthy dose of fear that helps me shift into taking decisions that require courage.
Mm-hmm. Very nice. And then the advice from other people, right? So sometimes it is inspiring and empowering, and sometimes it is really not, right? How do you go about this?
So I have, you mentioned I have also, I'm a communicator, and I've since over a year I've been writing a blog. And I actually just recently wrote a blog. It was early this week, or a few weeks ago when this airs. So you heard my roots. I've come from Canada. My dad was a cowboy. And I remember a pivotal moment. Imagine we would be going off on riding adventures for an entire week where you don't see anybody, you know, no electric cables,
and nice.
We're completely off grid. And, you know, for years, he took me as a small child, I had a horse who liked to roll whenever we crossed rivers. Like, imagine deep rivers, like the water is high up. And my dad would always lead my horse across. And so I felt safe. And then came a day where my dad said, "Now it's your turn. You're going to cross on your own." I was absolutely petrified, And, you know, basically said, there's two things. First of all, if you don't believe in yourself, your horse will not. They will sense that. And secondly, it's okay if it doesn't work the first time. We are going to keep on trying this until it works. And I had seen him do that in other instances when a horse doesn't want to get into a trailer. So I had to trust him. And as an adult, I often think back to the situation that gave me courage. And I have had work situations where I've walked into a room. I've literally had this. I walked into a room. I hadn't even sat down and put my jacket down and my coat. I'm about to present something. And I've had people say to me, "You'll never make it."
Great.
And these are moments where it awakens in me like the Canadian grizzly. And I think back to that moment, you just go ahead and tell me that and I will show you is what that instills in me. And so I have made that almost like a regenerative power that helps me in situations like this. So I think everybody should reflect on moments that we've all had where we've overcome adversity and use those as your memory moments. When somebody tells you you can't, oh boy, girl, you can.
Uh-huh. And tell us, what happened with the horse? Did you manage?
So what happened is, so horses, you know, if you know them well, every little thing is they're communicating with you, their ears, the way they flicker. And so at first she was hesitant to take my lead. It was also confusing for her. She didn't get the briefing on the change here. And then we were moving forward and what happens is they hesitate, right? And that's that oh my God moment. And I remember what my dad used to say in those moments, and he would drop his voice in a low voice and say, "Come now, come now." And so I just said, "Come now." And so that's my call to myself. Come now, you got this, girl.
Uh-huh. Very nice. Very nice story. Also nice images. So we've heard change is painful, right?
It requires
uncomfortable. It requires courage, confidence in yourself, but also some risk taking, listening to others or not, or the art of not listening, right, to bad advice. Anything else?
Community. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's in my role and any of my previous roles, I can do hardly anything on my own. And if you can't, you know, get a collective force together. You know, you start with your allies is always, you know, an easy one. If you assess your stakeholders, who's involved here, you look at the low-hanging fruits, who are your allies, and you start to build momentum, right? And that is how you create change, which is why organizations like Advanced are so important as connectors and collaborators, that we have these common challenges together and we learn. I love that about this topic because it's like open source, right? Mm-hmm. What works for you might work for me. And that's how it works on an individual level. And then collectively, we can make a difference.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yes. And if we think concretely about gender norms, mm-hmm. right? Do you have any advice? What should each one of us be doing in order to change them, mm-hmm. hopefully not only in 170 years from now? Mm-hmm.
So I've pivoted my thoughts on that question over time. So previously, when I was, you know, earlier on in my career, I spent a lot of effort and I went to courses to learn how to be successful in the boardroom. You know, and you learn, you know, some of the things are regardless of gender, but it's how you carry yourself. It's the space that you take in a room, how you use your voice, the words that you use, and sort of the confidence that you bring to the conversation. And I've learned you know, even things that maybe I don't want to do. So for instance, you know, some of the boardroom tactics about who you should be, where you should be looking, what you should do when somebody's trying to interrupt you. So we have the opportunity to learn those things. And also thanks to social media and online, it's just so much more accessible, which I like. However, at the pivot point in my career is also, do I want to keep on adapting or do I want to change the system? And that is, I think, I'm at the stage in my career that I'm focusing much more on the system. And for me, going back to your question on the difference between females and males, I think everybody wins when the possibilities are just more vast. It's not just with gender, it's also with other aspects of diversity, be it race or sexual orientation, age, and so on. I think when we collectively accept that the way of doing business is diverse, then we all win in the end.
Yeah, it's 100% agree with you. Thinking back of my career, right, there were moments where I've changed things, et cetera, et cetera. And what I remember very clearly is that I was a little bit afraid as well. I mean, today, everybody's wiser afterwards, right? But in that moment, when you want to make a decision, a big change, et cetera, et cetera, you are afraid that you are maybe making a mistake, right? What is your advice on this? What should we be doing differently?
I think every person deserves a cohort of like a fan club. And for me, the definition of, so fan club, of just really close people. And the definition for me is, you know, those people that you speak to when you finish an evening with them, you walk away feeling about 10 centimeters taller. Those are the people I'm talking about. So it can be friends, it can be colleagues, it can be family members, hopefully your partner. And they are the people that I've always confided in when I'm hesitant and unsure. And it doesn't mean I always go in the direction that person is telling me, but it gives me feedback. It challenges, again, those biases, those limiting biases that we can put on ourselves. And I think that has been the secret also to my success, is having that network of people that build you up and give you the confidence when you're even doubting yourself.
I like this very much, the fan club idea. This is a very nice picture. And goes very nicely with my next question, right? There is this saying, you cannot be what you don't see. Role models is another thing. How can we be role models? How can we support other women?
So there's two aspects to that. One is, mentioned previously, I think it's important that we broaden the scope of what is acceptable. Like many people, I'm constantly trying to be more sustainable with, for instance, my clothing choices. How many times have I tried the capsule wardrobe and to minimalize and so on? And I recently said to my husband, and so I love green. I'm wearing blue actually today, but I love green and he loves blue. And I said, I'm getting rid of all the blue in my wardrobe. He's like, pardon me? He was highly confused. I mean, okay, so concretely, I'm going to get rid of the navy blue in my business attire. And the reason is I've realized I'm so sick of tired of the same blue. And if you look into the workforce, you know, what do men wear? It's predominantly navy blue business suits, right? And I'm not saying that I love a nice suit, absolutely. But if you look into the business room, I've often, you know, at management events, I will wear something rather colorful and actually even rather flashy, because I want to make a bold statement of, yes, here I am. And wouldn't it be great to have a little bit more color at this table? So, you know, that is one about changing norms. Does that go answer your question?
Yes, yeah? Role models, exactly. Role models, yeah. So being a role model in this respect, because visibility
is for
women a big topic, right?
And I've had, you know, we all get career advice. You know, we have either official mentors or unofficial, and I've people often ask me, who was your, you know, greatest mentor in your life? And it's a collection of many people. It's a collection of books, and it's cherry picking. And for me, it's really important to be an authentic leader. And I wouldn't be an authentic leader if I was purely simply copy-pasting one person. So I'm cherry-picking what I think works for me. And, you know, I once had advice from somebody who said, listen, ask questions to your senior stakeholders, and then deliver exactly on that. And this woman was incredibly successful with this recipe. It worked for her, and it got her access and opportunity. But I remember at one point thinking that I see that works for you, but I actually like to be the challenger. I like to be provocative sometimes, and doesn't mean I always need to get my way, but I see that as my role. And so therefore, thank you very much for your feedback. I'm going to take that on partially to listen more and ask more questions, not talk too much, but I actually am quite comfortable to be the disruptor now and again. Mm-hmm.
I like the word partially. Very, very much. I'm slowly coming to the end
already?
Of our discussion. Yes, I could sit here also for at least another hour and speak with you. Can you give us some concrete tips? What would you advise people, women and men and everybody else, who want to overthrow those old-fashioned norms?
Mm-hmm. Probably will be summarizing a little bit of all the things that we spoke about. So I go back to saying change starts with you. So before we start pointing fingers at others, we look at the three that are pointing to us. So what can I do concretely? With that comes to be a role model. So I'm very conscious about how I speak and the image that I give my children, other people, and so on. And the third one is probably also celebrate the small successes. So sometimes it's easy to get frustrated. We spoke earlier about what's happening in the world and the changes. It's easy to get frustrated and to get upset. But again, taking the mirror to that resistance, what can we learn from this? How can we get even bigger and stronger off of this? And if we do that individually and collectively, I think we're going to make progress.
Mm-hmm. What a nice summary. And the point I remember from our discussion is the point about cooperation, how cooperation and not polarization, right, mm-hmm. brings us, all of us, further. And the fun club.
I like the fun club
very, very much. So, Liza, thank you very much for being here today for this wonderful discussion.
Thank you so much for having me here. It's been a pleasure. I hope that this is going to inspire somebody out there. And I'm looking forward to hearing all the other podcasts to come.
Mm-hmm. Great, I'm sure it will. To all of you out there, thank you very much for listening. See you next time.
Das war der Advanced Podcast mit Alkistis Petropaki. Weitere Informationen zu dieser Folge findest du in den Shownotes. Alles weitere zu Advanced gibt's online unter weadvance.ch, auf Instagram unter @weadvance.ch und auf LinkedIn.